Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to today's broadcast of Firefly Willows LIVE. Our host this week is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Mildred Lynn will take you on a fascinating tour of the mind-body-spirit connection through a combination of healing conversations, hands-on personal growth tools, and a generous sprinkling of East Coast humor and warmth. Join her as she chats with Karen Brown. They'll discuss her exciting new Go Green Inside program. You'll love our chat with Newfoundland's Natalie Finley. Natalie leaped into life coaching with a passion and offers sage advice about pursuing a career change with a twist. Mildred Lynn talks with Director of Career Services at Queen's University and author Kathy Keats about her book, Not For Sale. And she'll moderate this week's Firefly Willows Roundtable with Heisey Luckmers and Firefly Willows founders John and Deb Carosella. We're excited. Give us a listen. Firefly Willows, LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light. This week's roundtable topic, advocate or activist? Are you selling out or living up to your potential when your voice counts? Coming right up.
Hi, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald. We're here with the Firefly Willows Live weekly roundtable. I'm here with Deb Carosella.
Good morning.
John Carosella.
Good morning.
And Heisey Luckmers.
Hello, and welcome to Studio H.
Studio H here in beautiful Menlo Park, California. And our topic today is about activism and being an advocate for what you believe in. The context is, and what I'd invite our listeners to think about, is the old adage that says, bad things happen when good people do or say nothing. So what I'd like to throw out for our group here today is, I'm wondering, what type of situation would basically activate you to take a stand in whatever form is appropriate, either writing a letter, adding your name to an email list? Does it have to touch your heart, your mind? And where do you feel you are in your personal development in that area? So anybody like to jump in there?
I know that it's relatively new for me to be actively engaged in the forum of discussion, of making your opinion known around a cause or around a subject. For many, many, many years, the extent of my activism included or was limited to something that was environmental, like the Nature Conservancy, or perhaps Greenpeace or something like that.
COCO.
Right. The Gorilla Foundation, COCO the Gorilla.
Oh, okay.
So, and Defenders of Wildlife, the Stand Up for the Wolves kind of people. Basically, it was become a member, write a check a couple times during the year, send them an additional little bit of money for this particular cause or for that particular thing, and that was pretty much like, okay, this is my charitable contribution, this is my activism, this is where I'm taking a stand. These people represent what I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
So these people represent what I think is important. Very recently, I have moved past just write the check and put my name on a list of membership for an organization to, and I think the internet plays a large part in that, in becoming aware and giving us a greater ability to use our voice. So through the internet and through all of the different organizations, again, signing the petitions and allowing it to be a little bit more of a personal, yes, I agree with these other people and my name stands with them, and then this is presented to with whomever we're trying to get aware of the, whatever's going on.
So do you feel that you're becoming more active?
That it's a huge, for me, it feels like a huge step.
And how does it feel when you do that?
It's a bit frightening still.
Okay.
I do not, it's
why?
Very, why? He's asked me that all the time.
I can understand frightening.
Yeah,
I can understand that.
I don't want to be publicly recognized. I like the anonymity of an organization that I believe in and I feel strongly, and I support them, and they go off and do the work for me, or they represent how I feel. I like that. It's a much more comfortable space for me to be in. When you commit to putting your name down with others, and it's now noted somewhere, that's a big deal to me. And it's like, well, okay, but this is something that I think, so I'll do that. the next step is to actually call a legislator or a representative and leave a message with their office that you stand for. Like, not quite there yet.
Okay.
Not ready to make that phone call yet. Not ready to actually show up in person at an organized event that stands for this or that or the other thing. So I'm taking tiny little baby steps towards being more in the public.
Oh, I just have one more question. Is there someone in this realm that you admire, their ability to show up in the legislature or go into a march or whatever?
George Clooney.
George Clooney, all right. Yes.
Admire them for different reasons.
Yeah. One reason.
That's right. I admire him even more for that.
Yeah.
I find him very enjoyable as his representation of what he does for a living and for the entertainment that he provides. But also, he is an individual who is very, very publicly well known. And yet, what might not be in his best interest, he still stands up and says, I think that this is important and I will go there. He goes to war-torn areas. He shows up in all kinds of... he could get blown out of the sky, and then where would we be? No more George Clooney. And yet he goes, and he does these things.
Yeah.
And so so there you go, George Clooney.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody else have any views on that?
Well, I think the Internet has been both a good thing and a bad thing in this regard. On the one hand, I think it has made many more people have the ability to be aware of issues, we've seen the effects of people getting petitions out, and suddenly everybody on Facebook is posting it, and then it gets all these signatures, and it actually has an effect. But I think it can also instill in people a sense of, I signed the petition, so I don't have to do anything else. And it gives them that safety of not having to actually mobilize themselves to go out to something, which, like what Deb said, it's like, well, somebody else is doing the work. I just have to sign my name and say, yeah, you go. I support what you're doing, but I don't have to actually do it myself. I was thinking, I would be curious whether the civil rights movement in the 60s would have been successful if the Internet had been around then. Because the power of that movement was seeing the people come out and make the marches, seeing the people willing to risk being shot with fire hoses and beaten by the police and all the things, that went on during that time, because those people believed in that, knew it was important, and were willing to step beyond their own personal safety, their own personal sense of, well, that's a little too uncomfortable, or I don't want to put the energy towards that. And I think that's a little bit of what may be lacking today, although I'm very encouraged by the Occupy movement, because you see the people keep coming out, you see it has actually a very large younger demographic, which is very good. And even though it doesn't get the coverage that a lot of people would assume, it kind of has fizzled away or isn't really happening, that isn't actually the case. So it's encouraging that there seems to be a new wave of willingness to be active, vocal, physically present and showing up to do those things, rather than thinking I can just sit behind the safety of my computer screen and somehow affect change because I clicked a couple of times on the Internet. And I'm not saying that that's a bad aspect of it. We just perhaps have to start pushing ourselves. And I think what pushes us beyond the edge for that is when something becomes an issue that has a personal effect or is more directly related to us, rather than seeming just like some big issue that how could I possibly affect change in that anyway? Like if you take the fracking, it's like, well, what can I do about the legislation for that? How can I battle these big oil companies? And, what would happen to me if I went out to lock arms with people and block trucks? Are they going to run over me? Are they going to shoot me? And, sometimes I'm humbled by looking at what's happening in a lot of the Arab countries, or even in China, if you think of Tiananmen Square, but especially now in all of these places where these people, they literally are willing to risk their lives to bring about these changes. And they're not backing down just because the military is bombing their communities and that kind of thing. They continue to be willing to push for change and make something happen to bring about something different, rather than cowering in fear and just accepting what is.
Like, I feel myself that I'm not as active as I should be and can be, and I'm learning, and I'm like Deb, I'm taking small steps. Do you feel yourself that you're showing up for your causes?
I do. I feel like there's an evolution of myself and my personal bandwidth to activist causes. I think the internet has actually been a really powerful catalyst for creating change and for activism in general. I really think the internet has been, I mean, okay, the civil rights movement, right? It was really hard for those people to know that they had support. Today, through the internet and Facebook and Twitter, 150,000 people can show up in Tripoli in a week and topple a government. I think the internet gives us a window into how many people feel the way I feel. And that's encouraging. So, yeah, and I think there is like, yes, maybe this one I'm just going to sign the petition. But the fact that I'm getting into the habit of signing petitions and stepping out and making myself visible and committing to being accountable for what I believe in makes it all that much more comfortable for me to take the next step, which is to stand up physically and be counted and be present.
So it is empowering. Does anybody else find that when you actually do take the next step of visibility, you could feel you're filling yourself out? You're growing into yourself?
I actually don't think of it that way. I thought to myself, I signed this petition, 300,000 other people signed this petition, and Congress dropped the law. That's what made it real. It wasn't that I did it. It was that it mattered. I think it matters. And I think that's what I get excited about, is citizen activism actually has an impact. So why the heck not step up and participate?
There's no downside.
There's no downside. Now, there might be a downside, right? Like in Syria, there's a downside.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Well, even here, there's a downside. There's pepper spray. Mm. There's tear gas. There's
rubber bullets.
Let us say police brutality.
Yes.
there's unnecessary use of force against peaceful protest even now, and I think that's what also can scare people away, because relatively speaking, you know, people in Syria and those kind of places maybe have an anticipation of a more militaristic kind of response, whereas for us, just being afraid of having pepper spray in our face because we usually don't live in a community or a way of life where we're subjected
to
or worried about those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that a lot of people don't know how to protest in a peaceful way? Is it taught in schools?
No.
Well, of course not.
No, I cannot imagine that being part of any of the curriculum that
conformity is basically what you learn through culture and through society. Just like the way you think about something and what is or isn't important. You know, you may hear somebody growing up or whatever, you may hear somebody complaining about, oh, you know, those people down the street never do anything with their lawn and it just looks bad for the neighborhood. And you're like, how is that even a big deal? It's not hurting anything or anyone, and who cares what they do with their lawn? Then you buy a house and you're in a neighborhood, and suddenly, it's almost like by osmosis, suddenly you start being concerned about how those people down the street have their lawn looking.
Right.
And I think that that's part of that societal cultural thing, because conforming, fitting in, seems to be what we're ingrained with.
I think culture in general is a process of acculturation, conforming to cultural norms and standards. Some cultures are more flexible about how variability that conformity can be, but fundamentally, we learn to live together by learning the rules. So it's not surprising that institutions teach us conformity. What would be interesting is if part of our culture included citizen activism as, oh, you're supposed to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll be part of the acculturative process. It was like, yeah, you're supposed to protest when things aren't right.
Because if you're not using that part of your voice, it's not really a democracy.
Exactly. You know, the challenge of follow the rules or do the right thing, that's where we are sitting, right, when we talk about activism. Follow the rules or do the right thing. Learning to reclaim doing the right thing in a way that's constructive and, you know, however you want to say it, is it because it's nonviolent or peaceful or rational or however it turns out, right? Maybe it's about doing art. Maybe it's about making music, you know, countercultural music or protest music, whatever it is, right? Choosing to do the right thing doesn't have to mean bombs, bullets, bonfires, smashed cars. It can just mean doing the right thing. That's a form of activism.
Now, is there anybody, I know that Deb is inspired by George Clooney. I'm sure many people are. What about, Hi C, what about you or John, any activists or advocates that come to mind that you admire?
Well, somebody for me.
Besides me, of course.
Yeah. Actually, somebody for me is T. Thorne Coyle.
Oh, okay.
Because she speaks out, but she also shows up.
Mm.
You know, she works weekly in a soup kitchen because she believes in helping people that are, you know, disadvantaged in some way. She shows up for Occupy protests and sits in silent meditation. She shows up and gets arrested sitting outside of a nuclear facility. For me, I admire that because she's willing to put her actions behind the words that she's saying, but she's also doing it in a way that remains spiritually aware and is not about just meeting violence, aggression, anger with violence, aggression, anger.
Mm.
You know, going and sitting outside in silent meditation or in silent protest can be just as powerful versus coming at somebody with a gun because they have a gun.
And on that note, we'll wrap up our roundtable for this week. Many thanks to Hi C, John, and Deb for sharing their thoughts and throwing in a little bit of humor along the way. Please join us next Sunday when our roundtable moderator will be the popular Hi C Luttimers.
We hope you found this roundtable discussion engaging and thought-provoking. If you would like to join the conversation, visit facebook.com/fireflywillows and add your comment under this week's roundtable.
In our next segment, I'll be talking with Karen Brown. She's the former executive director of the Holistic Health Research Foundation of Canada and the new CEO of Go Green Inside. Karen will share her personal journey into holistic medicine, provide the inside scoop on the new Go Green Inside program, and offer tips on how we can all be a healthy, luscious shade of green inside and out. Then we'll beam over to Newfoundland, Canada, to chat with life coach Natalie Finley. She'll entertain you with her personal journey, share what people are really looking for when working with a life coach, and offer her insights about pursuing a career change with a twist. In our last segment, we'll talk with author Kathy Keats about her groundbreaking book, Not for Sale. This is your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald. Stay tuned.
Firefly Willows is excited to announce a new workshop, The Magical Roots of Reiki, Bringing Forth What is Hidden. Participants in this workshop will explore the esoteric knowledge hidden within Reiki, delve deep into its history, meaning, and mystical source, and experience firsthand the power that powers Reiki. Join us in Los Altos, California in July 2012 as we host Jose Figueroa Garcia, Director of Natural Therapies of Oslo, Norway. Jose offers this workshop in English and his native Spanish. Visit fireflywillows.com for more details.
Welcome back. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I hope that you're enjoying the show today. In a few minutes, we're going to connect with Karen Brown in Toronto, Canada. As shared earlier, Karen is the former executive director of the Holistic Health Research Foundation of Canada and the creative force and new CEO of Go Green Inside. It's a really exciting time for Karen. She's launched a new national program, and it focuses on 6 key lifestyle areas. I'm also interested in hearing more about the Daily Commitment to Me pledge, and as always, about Karen's personal journey and how it's fueled her passion for complementary medicine.
Karen, hi. Welcome to the show. We're really excited to have you here with us today. And I want to congratulate you on the launch of Go Green Inside.
Thank you so much, Mildred Lynn, and thank you for inviting me today. I'm really excited to be here.
My pleasure, and we'll have a good chat.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
What I'd love to ask you is, what is the driving passion behind Go Green Inside? And I know it could be linked with your position as executive director of the Holistic Research Foundation of Canada. How does that all meld together in the passion department?
Yes. Well, I've always been extremely interested for quite a number of years now in what health and healing really means and the true nature of it in all its forms and layers, and have really been driven by the fact that I feel that our healthcare system has really separated all the different parts of our bodies, and it's time to put them back together again. And it's not just the parts of our bodies when we're considering health. It's also our mind, our spirit, our emotions, and the environment that we live in. Every part of our lives, the jobs that we hold, the day-to-day relationships, all of that, it's all part and parcel of how we stay healthy. That's really the essence of Go Green Inside. And the notion with Go Green Inside is that while people are talking, certainly it's become rather mainstream now to talk about going green for our external environment, not everyone has connected those dots that, oh, you know, there's also our internal environment. And of course, in truth, where everything is interconnected, where one is healthy, the other one will be healthy. And some of the same problems we're seeing with the sustainability of our external environment is reflected in our internal environment as we continue to eat processed foods and are not aware of the toxins that are contained in the things that we're eating and putting on our skin. And all of that is going to impact our internal environment and make us less sustainable. So sustainability can come from the inside as well.
Excellent. And you had shared with me that there is a doctor in Vancouver who inspired you in terms of his perspective on the current state of healthcare. Can you share that with our listeners? Yeah, they'd love to hear.
Yes, his name is Dr. Hal Gunn. He's an MD who leads a center in Vancouver, BC, called Inspire Health. He has been, I guess, a source of inspiration to me. And what he does is he works in a center for integrated cancer care. And he and his team, and there's a number of MDs there, and they also work in areas like acupuncture. There's a nutritionist. There's this sort of different health practitioners that form a truly holistic team that work with people who are diagnosed with cancer to help them heal on all of the different levels. And that's exactly the model of care that I'm advocating for in the work that I'm doing.
He had said something to you, or you read something that he had said. I remember you told me before.
Yes, was at one of his talks that he gave. And he said something that really, really stuck with me. He said that conventional medicine and our healthcare system as it stands today has become profoundly disconnected from wisdom, health, and healing. And that just made so much sense to me. That's exactly how I feel.
And so he's taken that concept and created a healing center around that very message.
Yes, and in fact, just got about a year or so ago, I believe, some really significant funding from the provincial government to expand his centers so that there will be, I believe it's 4 centers across the province and a virtual center as well.
Now, how did your background working in holistic medicine research come together with your personal journey? Because I know you're very passionate about the holistic model, very well versed in what's going on. And you did have a personal journey that was a bit of a catalyst to bring it all together. What was that about, and what did that look like?
Yes, actually, it was a combination of a couple of things. My mother actually had some health problems. She chronic health problems, as many, you know, seniors do, and more than one at the same time, which can complicate things. And she among those were what we believe is probably at least irritable bowel syndrome, but something almost closer to like a Crohn's disease. And she also had arthritis that was very, very long standing. And both of those things are caused from inflammation. And all of us had always been sort of open to complementary modalities and looking at beyond the conventional treatments. And she had not had any success with the conventional treatments and was finding some success with the alternatives. And I guess I had always been curious and interested in that. Then my father, about 13 years ago, was diagnosed with prostate cancer. It was small and contained at that time, and he did something called watchful waiting, which is just where you continue to monitor your PSA levels, and if nothing is spreading and so on, then you don't necessarily go for any particular course of action. so he decided to do that and look at other forms of healing. But for me, there was always a piece missing, which was the emotional component. And while my parents were very open to complementary therapies, for me, it's more than just substituting an herb or some other natural remedy for a pharmaceutical drug. There's more to it. You also have to look at the rest of the person's internal environment. I knew that there were some things in his life that had happened that had been challenging for him that he had held inside him for years in repressed emotions and so on. And I felt that that was very strongly correlated. And we know now from research that, and there's a whole field, it's called psychoneuroimmunology. And I'm not a health professional, so please don't ask me to explain what that means.
But you're good to use the words.
Yeah. But basically, it's the connection between the body and the mind and the emotions and how that all comes into play. So I've been a big believer in that. There's lots of information about that from different authors that you can find. And for me, that was the missing link. And so I became really interested in that piece as well. Mm-hmm. But also recognizing that there's a lot you can do for yourself in the complementary or integrated means the combining of the best of and the least invasive of the conventional with the most effective of the complementary.
So Karen, when you're speaking, what's the appropriate term? Is it alternative medicine or complementary medicine or integrative medicine? I always find with myself, I interchange them, but maybe that's not the best way to be expressing myself.
Right. Well, and then there's also natural health, holistic health, you know, and people do tend to use them all interchangeably. And they are, I guess, really to some degree. Alternative, of course, has that connotation of it's instead of, which I think is not the direction we want to go, right? If we want to try to encourage a healthcare system that's all-encompassing, we don't want to position this as alternative because that gets people's backs up. That's an either-or. We don't want that. And we recognize, of course, modern medicine has a lot to contribute. So that's why I like complementary. But it's not a term that's necessarily well-known, and certainly holistic is, but it also has a connotation that not everybody is comfortable with. Integrated is a great word, but it's not necessarily understood by everyone. Not everyone's heard it. So it's tricky. I've also heard there's another one, comprehensive. But again, that can mean anything, and even integrated can just mean that the doctor talks to the nurse, right? It's not about necessarily, in a lot of people's minds, the integration of complementary medicine with conventional.
So if you were reading something or attending something, would alternative, complementary, comprehensive, integrative, which one would catch your attention where you'd say, this sounds credible?
Oh, goodness. Well, in the scientific community, the people that are really trying to advance the science of this, they use the term CAM, which is complementary and alternative medicine. So you'll see that a lot. So if I saw CAM, then I would know that it had sort of an evidence science basis to it. And if I saw integrated or integrative, which are the two different words, I would also pay attention to that as well.
Oh, see, that's excellent guidance for someone like me, and I'm sure for other people too. When you were running the Holistic Research Foundation of Canada, I understand that you took away from that some learnings, and I'm wondering if you could share that with people.
Well, on a professional level, you know, it was a big challenge. It's very difficult, I find, to be ahead of the curve. And maybe we were a little too far ahead of the curve. And to operate a charitable organization is certainly a tricky thing to begin with. And the competition for donors, and it was also a few years after we launched. And the beginning is always extremely difficult, of course. You don't have a donor base and you're trying to build that. And then coupled with that, you're not really fully in the mainstream. It may be, you know, that it's 10 years off. And then you have an economic downturn. So you put all those pieces together, and we realized sort of ironically that we were not sustainable, even though that's really what we were talking about in terms of healthcare. For me personally, it became not so sustainable for me either. It was a fabulous experience. If I could do it all over again, I would. And I learned an awful lot in my personal journey. I mean, beyond the technical skills and things that I can do now that I couldn't do before. Just one of the key things is really, for me, and this is part of my personal journey, asking for help.
Mm.
And not trying to take it all on myself. And being able to admit when I was getting into trouble, when things were not looking so great financially, my instinct was to just push harder and to work harder, do more. And I, you know, the forcing and the trying to swim upstream sometimes is it's not the best thing. You need to take a step back. And but I was just always so sort of driven by if I've got to do more, get more things done in the day. And it was I forgot to take that step back and keep mindful of the bigger picture. Ironically, an organization that was trying to advance the principles of whole living and whole health, and I was really kind of killing myself, you know, trying to do it. That wasn't working.
Well, I know my mother always said the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So you, your heart was in the right place. And as you were speaking, it reminds me of a high-tech startup, and people do their first high-tech startup, and when venture capitalists are looking to invest, they look at the management team to see who has actually done this before, because there's only life lessons you can learn a lot of the time through diving in there, rolling your sleeves up, and now you understand. So you have all this wonderful knowledge and experience that you can take to the table for your new project, Go Green Inside.
Yes, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Go Green Inside is an information site that is dedicated to helping people sustain their internal environment. So our tagline is create a more sustainable you.
Mm.
We have information from contributors, mostly Canadian, but not exclusively, who are writing articles for us. And I've decided to dive in. And before I did holistic health research, I was a communications consultant and a PR consultant. I did a lot of writing and editing and so on. So I thought, well, what the heck? I'm gonna be the publisher anyway. Might as well also be a writer. So I do some of the writing as well. But mostly it's contributors who are experts in the different topic areas that make up Go Green Inside.
Now, Karen, what would some of those topic areas be? And if we go through them, what sort of content? I'm wondering at what level you jump in so people can get a good feel for that.
Yes. Okay. So there are basically six topic areas that I thought would be really great because they represent all of the pieces, I think, of the puzzle that you need to be sustainable. So the first one is nutrition. And of course, you know, it's true. You really are what you eat and what you absorb. So that's an obvious one. We'll have food and recipes, but also talking about the elements of nutrition, what the foundations of a good diet to prevent disease and to just have optimal health would be.
And who would write for that, Karen? Would that be nutritionists or alternative? I mean, complementary, I mean, comprehensive.
I would say yes, any and all of those. You know, anybody who has a really solid background in nutrition, and that could be, it could be a naturopathic doctor, could be somebody who works in holistic nutrition. There are a number of different types of specialists that would contribute to that section.
And the neat thing is that they would all have a unique perspective. So something to appeal to everybody.
Yes, although certainly when it comes to natural health and nutrition in particular, I really do want to make sure that the articles are of high quality and evidence or science-based. You'll even find references at the bottom of some of the articles, just to keep it honest and keep it real.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. And I'm sure that your Holistic Health Research Foundation contacts and research database will certainly come in handy there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll be drawing upon those relationships.
So what's the second category?
The second one is natural health, and that's all about exploring all of the complementary, alternative, holistic, comprehensive, integrative treatments for just for optimizing your health, prevention, or for treatment of something that you may already have.
Okay, and what would be the third one?
The third one is activity, and that's everything about exercise, whether it be yoga, running, whatever you do that moves your body, dance, anything like that, and active living in general for a healthy, balanced life.
Would that appeal to people in certain age groups, or is it the general population? Is it children specifically, teenagers? Do you break it down like that, or how does it work?
The intention for the site is that, and I'm anticipating that our typical sort of target reader is going to be someone in the neighborhood of 25 to 55 on average. So it's a bit of a variety there, and some of those people will have children. Typically, what applies to one applies to all.
Okay. And what about your next category?
The next one is what I'm calling relaxation, which is really all about stress reduction, breathing, yoga might fit into there as well, meditation, getting quality sleep, all the things that make you go, ah.
Okay.
Or, om.
And what would be an example of a type of contributor that would write for that particular section?
Well, for example, right now I have something up. She's a holistic practitioner and a registered holistic nutritionist, but she has a book. It's called Frazzled, Hurried Woman. So she talks about things like, you know, are you overcommitted? Here's how to figure it out, and here's some strategies to manage that, learning how to say no, those kinds of things. Mm. And that's all about reducing our stress, which directly impacts our health.
Okay, and what about the next category?
Inspired living. And that's a really fun one. I that's personally my favorite because it's the missing pieces when people talk about health and how it's really not just about our physical bodies. So this is finding balance and joy and passion and purpose in every area of our life.
Oh, neat. And who would write for that? Yourself? I can tell.
Well, I've got a professional organizer that's doing a piece, a feng shui expert. There's also life coaches. There's really a lot of different kinds of people that, you know, anyone who's in the self-help business, speakers, authors, coaches of different sorts would write in there.
Oh, excellent. And your last category, which I have to admit is my favorite.
Yes, eco-awareness. So this is really the intersection point between the internal environment and the external environment. This is all of the green living and eco tips for body primarily, but it all impacts the planet, so it's one and the same.
So would a topic area like nature deficit disorder be covered in that section?
You know, I think it could go in any number of sections. It could go under activity, because it's all about active living, and certainly getting out in nature is one of the greatest activities we can do. So I might put it there, but I could also put it in inspired living or eco-awareness. I mean, I think that kind of demonstrates the point of Go Green Inside, that you cannot separate out almost one topic from another. And I actually, you know, I'm thinking a lot about, as the content grows on the site, how we're going to delineate everything, and I'm realizing it's actually a challenge because you could put some things in any number of different categories depending on what it is.
And it also sounds like the different categories come together in a dynamic way to become an organism in themselves.
Exactly.
They take on a life of their own. Karen, can you just one more time go over the six categories for our listeners?
Yes. So that's nutrition, natural health, activity, relaxation, inspired living, and eco-awareness.
Which is my favorite. Now let's move on to the pledge that you created. And from what I understand, there was a little bit of inspiration that came to you to create the Daily Commitment to Me pledge. Do you want to share a little bit about that with our listeners?
Yes. So I was really thinking about this whole concept of going green inside and wanted something that would kind of articulate how the inner and the outer environments relate to one another. Because everybody is so, I think, aware now, it's really hit its tipping point, the whole idea of going green and the external environment. But as I said earlier, not necessarily everyone has made the connection between being sustainable on the outside and what we need to do to be sustainable on the inside and how one can impact the other. So I wanted to create a pledge, basically, that people could take, and it's 8 simple statements written almost as affirmations that people could feel inspired by. They can print them off, you know, have them beside them in their office, just to kind of keep them inspired and motivated on a daily basis to their own inner sustainability, but really using words that link the inner and outer environment.
Karen, would you be kind enough to read the 8 affirmations? And I would invite anybody that's listening to quiet themselves and center themselves, and even if you want to, close your eyes as Karen reads these 8 beautiful affirmations. I just think they're fabulous.
The daily commitment to me. I exercise my body, mind, and spirit as I tread lightly on the earth. I minimize my exposure to toxins in my food, at home, and at work. I eat my greens, reds, oranges, and purples. My menus empower my body. I respect the gifts of nature, plants, herbs, and foods, for their potential to heal. I focus on prevention rather than just treating symptoms. I take responsibility for my well-being and help inspire family and friends. I understand that all the parts of my body and life are interconnected. As I care for one, I care for the others. I'm conscious that the choices I make today affect my short and long-term health. I choose wisely.
That's beautiful. In fact, I had my eyes closed, and as I had my eyes closed and I was listening to what you were reading, the inspiration came into me that if people had that printed off, which I know that's available on your website, it's a gift to whomever is visiting your website, if they would read it once a day in the morning, could you imagine, you know, in a month's time or 2 months' time, how a person's priorities or thinking or feeling process could shift?
Absolutely.
And Karen, how have these 8 affirmations impacted your life?
These are really the basis of everything that I've been working for and trying to live in the last, let's say, 10 years. Sometimes doing a better job than others, but I think that, you know, I've got this up on my counter by my desk, and I do look at it because it reminds me not only what I need to do for myself, and you can talk all day about helping to heal other people, and you can have a great website, but it has to start with yourself. You know that very famous expression that Gandhi has, that saying, you must be the change you wish to see in the world. And so I need to embody this myself in order to be of most service to others through gogreeninside.ca. This isn't just something that I am espousing for others. I have to live this myself. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm the first to admit, it's not easy. It is a daily recommitment. It, you know, you have to think about it daily. It's so easy to fall into patterns.
Well, as you read it, it felt like truth to me. And that's a fabulous place for everybody to start.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the word sustainability several times as we've gone through our time together here. And it occurred to me that, yes, sustainability makes a lot of sense. I wonder why people are not able to sustain things. What are the common pitfalls or hiccups that you run into? Maybe that you could write about.
It is. And actually, there's a bit of a plan in the works to do just that. But I also want to pose, I'm also going to pose the question out in the community. As our community of subscribers and readers grows, I'm going to pose that question, what sustains you? And what gets in the way of that sometimes? And I mean, I think the biggest one is just, it's do. We forget that we need time to just be. And the more we do, the more frantic our lives get, and with social media, and it just seems like there's this kind of onslaught of data and information and to-dos coming at you all the time. That's how we get off balance. That's how we lose our way and become less sustainable.
And I'll really look forward to you exploring that and inviting other people to leave comments.
Yes, and I also would love to invite people to take the Daily Commitment to Me pledge. You can get it on our website, and you can submit your name, and that gets you our weekly e-newsletter as well. But we're also really wanting to keep track of the numbers of how many people have taken the pledge, and we really encourage people also to forward it on to others. We've got some tools on the website that enable you to just do it with the click of a button. You can do it through social media or email it to a friend. And just to get the momentum going and see if we can get, you know, a huge number of people committed to this daily pledge.
Now, what is the website address for Go Green Inside?
It's gogreeninside.ca. And in fact, if you type .com, you'll end up in the same place.
And you're available. There's your website. There's your newsletter. There's the pledge. I believe you're on Twitter.
Yes, we're on Twitter at Go Green Inside.
Okay, and you have a Facebook page.
Yes, which is also facebook.com/GoGreenInside. Easy to remember. We're consistent.
Go Green Inside. And sustainable. Now, Karen, if someone had an inspiration or an idea for a story or a blog or just wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the way to go about and do that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I really want this to be a resource for people. So I'm really looking forward to getting comments from people. What do they want to know? What's the driving questions for them so that we can be of most relevance to people? There's a contact us page on the website. There's a little contact form. Just fill it out. It'll get to me, and I'll get back to you.
Excellent. I have a question that I'm playing with, and it really intrigues me. It goes like this. If people only knew that.
One of the biggest things for me in my journey is really just this notion that we're all interconnected. And if we truly understand that, I think it just shifts everything, because we realize that we are no different, no better, no worse than anybody else and anything else, and that we have a contribution that we can make that is, although we're all interconnected, we're all individual, sort of one of those great paradoxes of life, I think, but that we all are capable of pretty amazing things that we can bring to the world. It all starts, I think, from understanding that interconnection and also understanding the most selfless way we can serve in the world is to start with our own selves and start with our own self-care. It's not selfish to take care of the self first, because if we don't do that, we don't have anything of true value to give to everyone else.
And I imagine, as you were sharing with me before, the connection to your personal truth is so important.
Absolutely. It's so important, I think. And it can be hard. You know, you think, who am I to do this? You know, I always have that little voice in my head before I start a new project that says, who am I to do this? But it's your truth. Those things that sit on our shoulders that just won't go away, those are the big ideas. And they come from someplace beyond our own thinking. That means that we're being asked to manifest them in the world. That's what I believe, and that's what I'm trying to live now.
Well, Karen, I really want to thank you in acknowledging you for having the courage to speak your truth and to step up to the plate and to create such a beautiful program that so many people will benefit from, Going Green Inside. I'd love to invite you to come back on the program in several months so we can catch up with you and have another conversation and hear about all of those wonderful categories that you shared.
Thank you. Yes, I'd love to do that.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful day. Be sustainable. Go Green Inside.
And you too. And thank you so much, Mildred Lynn. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye for now.
In our next segment, we'll be heading to Newfoundland to chat with Natalie Finley about how life coaching changed her life, and to get a bird's eye view of what people are really looking for when they start a life coaching program. Later, we'll catch up with Kathy Keats, author of Not For Sale. She'll tell us why it's always best to look for work in an authentic, comfortable, and confident way. This is your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald.
A personal tarot reading can offer you insight, information, enlightenment, and empowerment along your life's path. Hi-C is a professional tarot conversationalist and ritualist with over 10 years' experience. He's available for readings in a variety of formats, including parties and events. To schedule your personal tarot reading, contact Hi-C at tarotbyhic.net or email him at hic@fireflywillows.com.
Welcome back. On this episode of What's Your Prescription for Balance, we'll chat with life coach Natalie Finley from Newfoundland. I first met Natalie about a year ago, and I've been impressed with the way that she handles her skills and knowledge, talents, and intuitive abilities. After a successful career as a speech pathologist, Natalie leaped into life coaching with a passion. Let's hear about her personal journey and then dive into what people are really looking for when they work with a life coach.
Natalie, how are things in Newfoundland?
Things are good, Mildred Lannis, and it's so nice to be here and have this conversation with you today. So thanks for the invitation.
What I'd love to ask you is, after a successful career as a speech pathologist, you've decided to become a life coach.
Yes.
How did you get from point A to point B?
As I look back, I realize that I've always been fascinated by anything and everything that had to do with self-development, ultimately living your very best life. So I didn't set out with a clear plan like 10 years ago or 15 years ago that I would work as a speech-language pathologist and then transition into something else. But I see the pieces of the puzzle have been kind of falling into place in that way. And over the years, you know, I have been looking at psychology, spirituality, meditation. And I think the kicker for me was that I didn't just get excited about learning these things for myself and living my own best life. I just was desperate and always desiring to share this with anyone who was willing to listen to how they could live their best life and how they even thought about what their best life might look like. It just was the thing that excited me the most.
Sounds like it's the question that kept coming back to you again and again and again.
Well, when I started university, actually, it was a process of trial and error. I wasn't quite sure what program of study I wanted to pursue. And I fell in love with psychology and completed my degree. The whole time I was wondering, though, what to do with this or how to use it in a professional capacity. You know, I've always been very curious, even from a very young age, about who I am, why I'm here, and very inquisitive about this. It was the thing I always wondered about, not in a heady way, just in the most curious and delightful way.
Oh.
Who am I?
I can relate to you, because my question before I started energy work and when I was just leaving high tech was, to what degree am I in alignment with my highest purpose? And it seemed like that question was always right around the corner, and books talking about that question were always on the bookshelf. And then finally I surrendered and decided, well, universe, if you want me to do this work, here I am.
Yes, I hear you.
Natalie, you shared with me before that there are a lot of bits and pieces in your life, and you were always curious as to how to fit them together or whether they would fit together. And I know from talking with people that those sentiments are expressed by many. What guidance could you give to a person who feels that they've been here, there, and everywhere? They've done a really good job. They've learned a lot, but they haven't found that exact thing that makes their heart feel joyous and fulfilled.
Their own sacred space or their own niche in this world. I was listening to a spiritual teacher the other day. It was Jack Canfield, actually. But a lot of spiritual teachers say the same thing, that we are born with a soul purpose and that life reflects back to us what this purpose is, and when we're in or out of alignment, if we get hot or cold as we consider and investigate different options. So what I've done in my own life and what I now encourage clients to do is something that I've learned through Martha Beck's coaching program, very easy to remember, and she talks about noticing, narrowing, and naming what's happening in your life. I know I spent a lot of my time, perhaps a bit, even though I was curious, at times I got frustrated that I couldn't think of the name, what I wanted to be when I grew up. You know, it's just, I couldn't, and I saw other people just seeming to move into their paths with, much earlier than me and with a sense of certainty I didn't feel I had. But now from this vantage point, I see, okay, noticing the things I was interested in, noticing the things I was always pulled to explore, noticing how I spent my time. I spend a lot of time in bookstores, and I make a beeline for the spirituality and self-development sections, and I would lose myself there. I'd spend hours there and have no sense that much time had passed. Noticing the conversations you have with people where you do lose track of time, noticing the conversations where you feel, this is a bit painful for me. You know,
a little bit draining. I feel like a wet noodle.
Yeah. You know, contrast is so vital to us kind of noticing our niche. Contrast is vital. It's a very important piece of the puzzle. How do we know what we truly love if we don't have the contrast and experience of things that we don't feel as passionate about? So I see that even though I wasn't conscious of it in my early 20s or 30s, I was noticing trends, and there were many beautiful trends playing out. Then I see now, again, with hindsight, that I started to narrow them, that I started to narrow how I spent my time, how I very consciously lined up with the activities, the books, the people who I felt most like me with, who it was most easy to be me with. So I very consciously narrowed my focus in that way, and I started to feel lighter, happier, more inspired, and then life brought to me more of that which I was narrowing my interest in. So once I got clear, life kind of got that I was getting clearer too and brought me more of those experiences, those windows and doors of opportunities.
Now, Natalie, what was the third N? There's notice, narrow, and
name. I remember I went to an intuitive a few years ago as I was trying to figure all of this out, and I said, but what will I be called? What will my title be? And she's like, you have to stop worrying about that. But I was very caught up in the name of it, but I hadn't done the legwork first of the, you know, consciously noticing and narrowing. But at the end, there is kind of a name that will resonate in your body. So now, you know, I do present myself with Life Coach. That feels very comfortable to me.
Okay.
Life Coach, Intuitive Consultant, Healer, there will be a few names that start to pop up as kind of umbrella terms that your energy will fit under in a very authentic way. But by the time you get there, you really won't care as much what the name is because you'll be lined up with it already.
That makes sense. I remember I walked the same path that you're talking about, and I couldn't think what to call myself, let alone how to describe what I did, because it was so intuitive, impression, and feeling-oriented. So it seemed like I knew what I was doing, but the part where I could express it through the fifth chakra to come out from my mouth to sound something articulate or made any sense was beyond me for years. And then I was inspired to simply call myself a healing conversationalist.
I love that.
Yeah, it felt good. It feels good. And I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but at least I can say it. So Natalie, I want to talk to you about the life coaching program that you're offering. I know you've just taken 10 people through the program and you're working with others. Are you seeing any common issues or patterns in terms of the types of people you're attracting and what they want to work on?
There are definite trends. And when I share that I'm a life coach and people aren't quite clear about that, I say, well, sometimes I work with clients who are getting clearer on their career, or sometimes I work with clients who are looking for a better relationship, whether that's with themselves or another person. It may be in the area of wellness, you know, whether that's physical, spiritual, mental, or emotional. So there are different trends that are very obvious when I first meet with someone. But what I find the most fascinating is that no matter what the surface level trend is, the undercurrent is that there is some level of wellness, stillness, quieting of mind, connection to their most authentic self, that people are feeling innately and intrinsically pull to explore, even though they don't quite know it. So as we start with this foundation of stillness, of quieting the mind, of wellness, and that is the fuel then that we use to chart our course for whatever the other trend is, whether it's relationship, as I said, career, finances. It's starting with wellness first.
And you had shared before that sometimes people engage you and they're not really even sure why they're engaging you, but they just have a sense that this is their next step.
Yes, yes. That's it. And that even resonates so strongly with me because, you know, when I look back to 4 years ago, I was somewhat aware, obviously, of life coaching and would have, I don't know why I didn't pursue the opportunity, but I think it would have served me well because I was at a point where my life actually looked very good on paper. I was happy in lots of ways, but I thought I was ready for something more. It was time to dive in deeper in some way. I didn't know how or where or in what area, but I just knew I was at the point in time in my own evolution as a soul on this planet that it was time to expand in some way. So sometimes people are coming and they'll say, Natalie, I'm not quite sure why I'm here. I don't know.
And you nod knowingly.
I've been there. And you are my people. Like, we are people in it, you know? So I get it. I can totally relate. Lots of times, Mildred Lynn, it is the healing conversation. As you refer to yourself as a healing conversationalist, sometimes it is just the opportunity to sit with a compassionate witness in a cone of silence, you know, in a very sacred space where someone can share just what happened that day or that week, to just share with someone who, with no strings attached, someone who's unbiased, someone who's allowing them to voice whatever it is they may want to voice, and just be with another human being and share their journey for an hour, 1 hour of their week, before they move on into their day.
What does the coaching process look like? I'm thinking there's people listening, they're intrigued, they're engaged, they're wondering, wow, this coach, life coaching sounds really good, but what does it look like on a step-by-step basis, or maybe I'd like to become a life coach? Can you go through that a little bit?
Sure, I'd be very happy to. If you want to explore life coaching, I would recommend, if you just want to Google life coaching and see what pops up, to see who's out there, to see what style or voice or energy resonates with you. My coaching process, in particular, I'm very happy to chat with someone if they have any questions before the process begins. And I do recommend a foundation period of at least 6 weeks to move into the process. It's like going to the gym. You know, you can go once and that's awesome. But it's like building, in coaching, we're building our spiritual muscle. Just, it's like having a personal trainer for any area of your life, like a physical fitness trainer. So the more you invest, the closer and clearer you get to achieving your goal. You can sign up for any number of sessions, but my experience has been that 6 isn't a good foundation. So I offer sessions once a week. Sometimes twice a week works out better. And it's done one-on-one right now. It can be done in person or by phone or by Skype. Really, we tweak it to make it support someone's life, the demands of their life, the day, the time of day or evening that works best. It can be tweaked in a very personal way, but that's the basic foundation for the coaching programs that I offer right now.
When a person is engaged with you, as you referred to before, the three N's, would that be a process you'd be taking them through, for example?
That would certainly be, you know, one tool that we could look at. Tool that I use is, in the very beginning, we explore a series of questions that are very gentle and they're just meant to be pointers for how we might use our time together. They're questions that help a person realize who they are. One of the questions I ask is, what is it that you really want? What will make you really happy? The kicker to that is, in order to know what you really want, you have to first line up with and remember and reconnect with the energy of who it is that you really are. Who are you in this lifetime? So there's a series of questions that help people remember parts of themselves that they may have forgotten, that they may do as naturally as breathing but haven't noticed that there's a trend playing out there. that they don't get to talk about or feel a little shy about sharing this aspect of themselves in their regular day. So we start with a series of questions to help them kind of realize who they are, what they really want, and how they want to use our time together. So the three N's would certainly be one tool that we could pull out.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of others. The questions really help, I guess, me as a coach become more aware of what tools may best support this particular client in realigning with their best self.
Oh, okay. Now, Natalie, as you were speaking, it was coming to me that wouldn't it be grand to do a live life coaching session?
That would be awesome.
I had a sense that we would both be open to that.
Yes, I would love to do that, Mildred Lynn.
So what it could look like is you and I would both be there, and then we would invite someone to come and experience real time what a life coaching session would be like.
Awesome.
And then people who would be listening could really get a good idea of what it looks like, what it feels like, the type of questions, the type of tools.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that definitely, and thank you for being so open.
You're very welcome.
Now, Natalie, I want to ask you, who are your role models or what type of spiritual leaders inspire you at this point?
Oh, gosh, I just got quiet as you answered that, because who do I say when there are so many? Actually, one of the coaches I've been reading about says that limiting yourself to five teachers at a time. And how do I limit myself to just five? And she's like, if one comes in, you know, you let someone else go for that period of time. So many teachers, but who am I listening to right now? This week I was listening to Jack Canfield and his success principles. Mm-hmm. I've also been listening to Wayne Dyer and Wishes Fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love the work by Byron Katie. She has a beautiful series of questions that help us. It's a process of inquiry that help us create some space between us and the thoughts that we're thinking. Who else is on my bookshelf right now? I'm enjoying, Eckhart Tolle. In 2008, when I read A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, for some reason, where I was in my life at that time and the message, I could hear it in a very clear way. And I keep referring to the teachings of Eckhart in my own life and as I work with clients. There's so much I find that he just helped me just flip a switch and really get things in a way I knew in theory before, but now I know in a deeper, truer way in my body. And Martha Beck, of course, I've been working through her life coaching program, and she is a phenomenal, phenomenal life coach and teacher. So many. And Tony Robbins, actually. I felt I had a lot of very gentle teachers. I was lining up with these very, very gentle teachers. And I thought, okay, I want some of that yang energy, you know, some of that powerhouse energy. So just recently I ordered Awaken the Giant Within and another audio by Tony Robbins. There's just so many, but I think it's very nice to have a balance. I think it is very nice to kind of, okay, what five would you like to line yourself up with for this moment in time and really spend time with these teachers? And you don't have to, like, travel to the far ends of the earth. You can pick up a book and be mentored by a teacher in that way.
Natalie, if someone would like to talk to you or engage you as a life coach or just to, or maybe access your reading list, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way right now, Mildred Lynn, is through my email address. Mm-hmm. So that's nataliefinley@nf.simpatico.ca.
And before we sign off, Natalie, I'd like to ask you if you have any sage advice to offer someone who's just starting out their spiritual journey and starting to take their mask off and choosing to invest in themselves. Anything that you've learned along the way?
If I could go back in time and speak to my 20-year-old self or my 30-year-old self, I would say to be gentle. Be gentle with yourself and to trust the messages you're receiving from your body. If you feel it's time to, you know, explore a new spiritual teacher, book, or process, you know, dive into it. And then I know what's very important for me is that I always take time to rest as I'm learning and expanding. It's very important, I think, to have a balance between work and play, between active movement forward in full integrity, and then rejuvenation on our own time.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I've learned is that you do not miss any opportunities when you're resting. It's not like you're wasting time or losing time. Take a nap on a Saturday afternoon. Go to bed early. Take a full week off from anything that looks like work, or take a full month off or 2 months off. Your body will let you know what you most need in this moment. And as much as learning fills me up, so does rest. So yeah. To have a balance that feels gentle and supportive of your soul as you're going through the process. So just not to feel you need to rush anything, or that there's a deadline that you need to reach by, you know, age whatever. Just trust that the process is unfolding in just the right time and in just the right way.
Natalie, thank you so much. I'm very happy that you're going to be coming back again to do a real life coaching session with me on healing conversations.
Yes.
And I know we'll have many chances to interact, and I wanted to let our listeners know that Natalie is also going to be part of our What's Your Prescription for Balance regular series. Thank you, Natalie, and forward to working and playing with you along the happy trail.
Thank you, Mildred Lynn. You have a great day.
Thank you, Natalie. The whole world of life coaching is fascinating, so I hope that you'll come back again. Perhaps we can do a three-way conversation with naturopathic doctor Glenna Calder next time. In our last segment, we'll talk with author Kathy Keats about her groundbreaking book, Not for Sale. Kathy will charm you with her fresh, innovative thoughts on how to transcend the widely accepted but often disheartening message that we need to put our authentic self aside to sell ourselves during a job interview. This is your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald. Stay tuned.
We hope you're enjoying this broadcast of Firefly Willows LIVE on Blog Talk Radio. For information on Firefly Willows, please explore our website, fireflywillows.com, or like us on Facebook.
Welcome back. Kathy Keats is the author of Not for Sale and the director of career services at Queen's University. I know that she has some important information to share that will help people, especially young people, with their job search. So let's join her in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, to find out why she feels so strongly about looking for work in an authentic, comfortable, and confident way. Welcome, Kathy, and thanks for joining us today.
I met Kathy a couple of years ago, and she shared with me that she had created a book called Not for Sale. As soon as I heard the title of the book, I was immediately intrigued, because being in integrity, being not for sale, being true to yourself, using your voice, are energetic vibrations that resonate with me very truly. So I have been really anxious to ask, what is the driving passion for creating this book?
I love talking about anything to help people be authentic and feel more comfortable. I've worked with people who are in career change and looking for new jobs for a long time. And I find that, I mean, that whole process of, especially if you're out of work and looking for something else, but even if you're working somewhere and you're not liking it and you want to move on, that whole process can be quite long and involved and sometimes frustrating and challenging. What I found was that a lot of the advice that was being given, I thought was adding to the challenge rather than helping people through the challenge. So a lot of typical job search advice is that you should go out there and sell yourself, and you need to market yourself. Then your resume is really an advertisement for you. After considering that and seeing people's reactions to it over a few years, I realized that the way we're supporting people in their job search was actually turning people into feeling like they had to be
more of a product than a person, and that the process was more about putting on a made-up face to present to the world rather than encouraging people to just be themselves. Uh-huh. And so I really wanted to try to have a dialogue with people about, is this really the way that we find jobs, by selling ourselves and, you know, creating elevator pitches about ourselves? Or do we actually find our next career opportunities when we realize who we are and we talk to people from our own authentic selves and connect to them in an authentic way? So the book is really arguing that there is a different way to do it, and we can be not for sale.
Kathy, how has your perspective been received, especially with young people who have the challenge of entering a workforce? And I'd say a workforce that's probably not like any other that anybody's experienced. How do they relate to your message?
I would say that what I've noticed the most is when someone's talking about what they're doing, especially when they're talking about networking and that sense that they have to go in and work a room and they have to be this perfect, poised self. And then we start talking about, is that actually the way to connect with people? And that there might be another way where you could be you and connect with them just by being you and talking about things you're both curious about. I find people's reaction, and young people's reaction, is often this big sigh of relief. And they go, really? I don't have to do that? Because that makes sense. It just doesn't feel right, and it doesn't feel good.
Yes, I'm enough. I'm enough. I'm enough. They probably feel like shouting that from the mountaintops. And if you were going to offer someone a couple of tips that would be based on your perspective and your books, if they're in a situation where they're looking for a job, because everybody at some point is going to be in that situation, or even in a situation where they're interested in joining a new group or association, or even, as you mentioned earlier, networking, what do you have to share with them?
If the situation, you mean, is job searching and struggling with that and who to be, I'd say that my tips are probably to look at what you're looking for out of work. If you identify things that you're curious about and genuinely curious about, and then you go out and explore those things, you're bound to bump into other people who are also curious about those things. And it's those connections that actually end up leading to opportunity. So the first thing is always, what are you looking for? What are you curious about? And going after that. And then the second thing I would say is that life really happens through relationships. As we think about our lives outside of just our paid work careers, it takes a village to raise a child. I think it takes a village to raise a career as well.
I love that. So it takes a village to raise a career. I think we'll quote you on that. And with your book, I know it's available on your website, www.careerconsiderations.ca. And if someone wanted to contact you in the context of the book or ask a question about the book, or they love the book and they want to send you some thank yous and accolades, can they reach you through your website?
Yes, they can. Yeah, there's a contact me page, and so they can send me a note through there.
So, Kathy, one more question, which I love to ask. It's my favorite question these days. If people only knew that...
I'd say if people only knew that by being more relaxed and more themselves, they'd find more success, I think the job search and career development process would be much more enjoyable and have better outcomes.
Kathy, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your experience and your book, Not For Sale, with us today. I know our listeners will love to interact some more with that concept, and I'm sure there's someone sitting out there that's saying to themselves and breathing a huge sigh of relief, saying, oh, finally, I can take this mask off. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
To learn more about today's guest or one of the topics discussed, go to fireflywillows.com/LIVE. And for more information about Firefly Willows LIVE upcoming shows, visit our page at blogtalkradio.com/FireflyWillowsLIVE. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. The month of June brings us the summer solstice,
as well as the celebration of Father's Day in the U.S. Join us next week when host Hi C will continue the theme from the May Mother's Day episode to explore the divine masculine, sun father gods, and male archetypes from a variety of perspectives and traditions. Next week, our roundtable topic with Hi C, John and Deb Caracella, and Mildred Lynn McDonald will be joy. Missed a show? Not a problem. Listen to the archives at fireflywillows.com/live or on blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. You may also download the podcast archives in iTunes. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows Live, Blog Talk Radio.